Remember, our phone number is... Oh, wait. This is a re-air, so we won't be taking phone calls. Although you might hear calls that sound live, and they were when they were taken. But, well, you get the picture. The following is an encore presentation on American Family Radio. Thank you for listening to this encore presentation on American Family Radio. And by encore, we mean previously aired, which means it's not really live, which means no new phone calls, which means... Thank you again for listening to this encore presentation on AFR.
And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND, staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today, folks. Hope that you all are staying safe, doing what you need to do to address this pandemic, but at the same time still enjoying life and still trusting in God for your safety, your security, and praying, I trust, for our country, because we really do need prayer to lift not only the scourge of the coronavirus, but to lift the scourge of hysteria and fear that has gripped our country. But you know what, folks? I see the signs that the American people, as always, in their frankly unparalleled collective wisdom, are starting to wake up and say, wait a minute here. Wait a minute. Something is not quite right. And so today we see protests in Ohio and Michigan at the capitals there in those states opposing their governor's so-called shutdown orders. Now, you all heard from Matt Staver yesterday on the radio program saying that these orders are by definition unconstitutional because in most cases these governors and mayors simply don't have the authority to do what they're doing. They don't have the authority. They're just standing up and declaring as if we're a nation that lives by some sort of governmental edict. We don't. We're a nation of laws and not of men. And there's a process, due process, according to the 14th Amendment, that is required in order to deprive people of their liberty. And part of what the Michiganders are upset about is, and I think in Ohio too, the vast overreach. I think in Michigan, the governors actually said you cannot talk or meet with family members. You cannot associate with family members. And people are saying, wait a minute, are you nuts? What is wrong with you? You know, the government can't order you not to see your own family. What's wrong with these people? And I guess they've just had it. So they're doing something, I think they're calling it Operation Gridlock, which they're driving to the Capitol. So they'll be in their cars, but they are flooding the Capitol to make a statement that this has got to stop. And folks, as you all know, I have been saying it. Can't speak for everybody, obviously, because different hosts on the network have taken different approaches to this. I think we're in fundamental agreement, of course, that our First Amendment rights must be defended. But I've taken the position, both as a former practicing attorney as well as a pastor, a minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, from the very beginning, that we were witnessing vast government overreach. And I think now a lot of people are beginning to say, you know what? Yeah, we that's exactly what we're witnessing here. Now, look, let's look at the data and remind ourselves of something. I've said, look, this is a real virus and it has real impact on people and we ought to take it seriously. Now, taking it seriously doesn't mean responding with hysteria, but yes, we should take it seriously. And I've said, you know, and by the way, folks, I think we should all admit we don't know that social distancing really helps. We don't really know, but it's the best we know right now. And so, yes, I don't disagree with it. I'm not disputing it. I think we're going to find out a lot of things in the aftermath that we think we know now. We're going to find out that they are simply wrong. But let's look at the numbers as they are. 610,774 cases confirmed in the United States as of today. Folks, we had 61 million cases of the swine flu. 61 million. We have had 26,059 deaths as of today, 26,059 deaths. Now, the swine flu only had 18,000. However, and this is what we're not told, you know, the swine flu continued to infect people and now has become part of the seasonal flu atmosphere. Did you know that? Yes, the swine flu is one of the seasonal flus that is out there that people contract. And by the way, it continues to kill. And I think I told you that the number right now is 24,000, but that number is not complete because the reporting, which the flu season period ends on March 21st or ended on March 21st, so the reporting continues to come in for several weeks, maybe several months after that, so before we get a clear picture of just what the seasonal flu did this year. But here's the other thing I would say. That 26,059 deaths, folks, I am absolutely convinced of this. That's an inflated number. It is an inflated number. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Now, I read a piece in Media Matters today basically accusing people like me of simply trying to defend the president's mishandling of this, and we want to lower the number of deaths because we want to protect and defend the president. It has nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with that. Certainly not from my perspective. You know what it has to do with? A desire to know the truth. Truth. Truth matters. No matter which way it cuts, it matters. If the truth helps the president, fine. If the truth does not help the president, you know, he's a big man. He can handle it. But I've talked to several medical experts now, and I'm absolutely convinced that these numbers are inflated because they're telling me that they are including as a coronavirus death any person who dies who happens to have the coronavirus when they die. So if a person dies of a heart attack or a person dies of a stroke or a person dies of cancer even, and they have the coronavirus, which they could very easily have, their immune systems are already compromised, then it is counted as a coronavirus death. And one doctor said to me, I know that that's not necessarily, you know, accurate, and some doctors might disagree, but that's the medical consensus. That's the way it's being handled right now. And folks, that's giving us an inflated number. And I'll give you a perfect example. Bishop Glenn of Richmond, Virginia, just passed away. I just read the news, I think this morning. He was not a close friend of mine or anything, but I did know him, met him, talked to him on more than one occasion. He and I had a mutual relationship with the Virginia Family Foundation. He had been a kind of chaplain for them, and when he stopped, I took over. I know Bishop Glenn. I mean, I knew Bishop Glenn. And folks, what the story, he was 66 years old when he died, by the way, so young man. What the story does not tell you is he was very, very sick. He had been very, very sick for a number of years. When I met him, he was sick. He was walking on a cane. Now, maybe he had some sort of improvement, but every time I saw him, it was clear that he was suffering from some sort of chronic illness. Now, I didn't know him well enough to know exactly what was going on. But, you know, they act like he's a perfectly healthy 66-year-old man. He got coronavirus and keeled over. That's the way they're telling the story. To once again, it inspire fear in all of us. The fact of the matter is, folks, the swine flu had a profound impact on people under 65, which in some ways, you know, people might consider to be more serious because, you know, you figure it's going to start killing off young people and relatively healthy people. That's a major problem. This particular disease is affecting primarily people over 65 and people with compromised immune systems due to underlying causes or preconditions or what's being now referred to as comorbidities. Not that the death of an elderly person is not serious. Of course it is. And it matters because we love our relatives. We love our mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers, and we don't love them any less because they're elderly. But we need to be told the facts about how this thing is proceeding, and we're not. We're being given, I think, selected information for the purpose of instilling fear. And it looks like the people of Michigan and Ohio have had it. And you know who else has had it? I think the people of Virginia have had it with this pretender to the governor's mansion that was once sat in by Thomas Jefferson and Patrick Henry. Ralph Northam needs to go. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
The Biden administration thinks that they may have found a way to promote higher corporate taxes to American voters. President Joe Biden and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen claim that it is all about ending the global race to the bottom. It is obvious that the president wants to raise our corporate taxes, but who knew that he also wanted to raise them across the world? He and the Treasury Secretary want to establish a minimum global corporate tax rate. A little history is in order. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act reformed America's corporate tax code after many other nations had already taken steps to reform their tax code. If you look at the various European countries in the OECD, most of them have a corporate tax rate similar to America's 21% corporate tax rate. President Biden wants to raise the corporate rate to 28%. That might encourage some companies to move their headquarters or their operations to other countries. And in the past, there were many news stories about corporate inversions, where a company reincorporates abroad to reduce their tax burden. There haven't been too many news stories like that in recent years because of the 2017 corporate tax cut. If President Biden is successful in raising the U.S. corporate tax rate, he would hope that Secretary Yellen would also convince other countries to raise their rates so that America wouldn't lose U.S. companies. This attempt to establish a global minimum corporate tax rate is being portrayed as a global race to the bottom. Actually, it's a classic example of tax competition. Some countries are willing to have a lower tax rate to encourage business development. That is good for those countries and good for those companies. It's not a race to the bottom. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Racism, go to viewpoints.info/racism. That's viewpoints.info/racism.
I'm Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. One of the toughest challenges for caregivers is to detach from the poor conduct of our loved one. Chronic pain, dementia, pharmaceuticals, fear, those things can cause all types of behavior issues. Maybe they're just having a bad day. Regardless of what's going on with them, we don't have to take it personally, even if it sounds personal. As long as our self-worth is tied to the opinion of someone else, we're never going to be a healthy person. You are an extraordinary individual created in the image of God, and amazingly, you show up to care for an impaired loved one. They may pop off at you, say hurtful things, and berate you, but remember, they are impaired on some level. Why would you attach your value to a sickness? Listen, they're not doing it to you, they're just doing it. Let it go on past you and go about your day feeling confident you're doing the best you can with what you have and what you know.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope, a ministry for the wounded and those who care for them. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Brian Fisher here. Arizona's governor sends his National Guard to the border to do the job Joe Biden won't do. Can he do that? Neighbors in Columbus agree the cop had to shoot to save the life of a girl who was about to get knifed. Virginia eliminates accelerated math classes, apparently so that all students will be equally dysfunctional in math. Next on Focal Point.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. That's right, folks. I am really on live. We were playing a best of because I had an unexpected development happen and kept me from getting on the air right away. But I am on now, and we are on live. I can take your calls. This is First Amendment Friday, and I do want to hear from you. And wow, I was so looking forward to just getting right into it. So we're going to do that anyway. 888-589-8840. We are on live here on First Amendment Friday. My apologies to you, but sometimes unexpected things happen, and this is one of those times that they happen. And folks, listen, this is one of the things I most love to do. And my goodness gracious, just bothers me if I have to be up. Even when I'm scrambling because of something that held me up, and I'm scrambling to get to the studio, even that I don't like, because I like to be ready and waiting. And when the bumper music ends, I am good to go. Well, I'm here for most of the program. So again, we are on live. The number is 888-589-8840. 1-800-530-1140. It is First Amendment Friday, and so we want to spend most of the time taking your calls. Let me just give you a chance to get to the phones, and you give me an opportunity to set up a couple of things, and then I want to hear from you because it's been quite a week, hasn't it? It really has been quite a week, and I know you have a lot of things on your mind that you want to share. One of the first things I wanted to talk about is the fact that Paul Krugman said that all the riots last year, guess what? They were fantasy. They were our imagination. Yes. Oh, they didn't really happen. It was the most peaceful set of protests in the history of protests. Sometimes you wonder what world these people live in. He says, they're always bad actors, but not many. The idea that our big cities were under threat is pure malevolent fantasy. BLM may have been the best behaved protest movement in history. Oh, really? Really? Well, you know, that just proves to me that these folks really do live in a fantasy world. They are completely out of touch with reality. Did you hear Joy Behar saying, he should have shot in the air? And I'm thinking, these people live such sheltered, pampered lives. You don't shoot, you know, I guess their reality comes from movies. Well, you know, you see somebody shoot in the air in a movie. But we know in real life that bullet is coming down. And you don't know where it's coming down. You don't shoot in the air. And there have been people killed by bullets shot in the air that land where you wouldn't expect them to land, precisely on somebody's head. He should have shot in the air. He should have shot her in the butt. He should have shot her in the leg. I mean, it just goes to show, as I've said before, these folks are completely out of touch with reality. It really is like cult behavior, that it just doesn't make any sense at all, except to the people in the cult. And then they look at everyone else and say, what's wrong with you? Don't you believe what we believe and see what we see? And the answer is, no, I don't, because I'm looking at reality. Look, $2 billion in damages last year. 400 police officers injured. Minneapolis alone had close to $400 million in damage. I've seen different numbers, but somewhere between 18 and 30 deaths during these riots. And it was all our imagination. Remember David Dorn? He happened to be an American of African ancestry, retired St. Louis police officer, killed trying to defend property against looters coming in. Yeah, killed, dead. Remember Officer Patrick Underwood, who is a Federal Protective Services officer out in Oakland, killed. What world do they live in? And by the way, you know, folks, I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm in the process of doing some research on all the children killed in inner city violence. Because I've mentioned thousands killed every year across this country, primarily black young men, but many, many children. I was told that there are memorials in Chicago all over the city, in, of course, the inner city areas, to young children who have been murdered. They weren't murdered by cops. I've written about some of them over the years. And in fact, just recently, a 13-year-old girl is in court. I believe she's in court today or coming into court for having murdered another 13-year-old girl. I mean, this is the reality of inner city life. This police officer was called to the scene, and if you listen to the 911 call, it was a frantic call. I mean, it wasn't calm. It wasn't, could we bring police? We know we're having a little argument here, and we don't want it to get out. No, it was frantic. It was as if somebody's life really was in danger, and it turned out it was. From the time the police officer arrived to the moment he had to fire that weapon, it wasn't 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes to talk to people and see. It was 9 seconds, folks. 9 seconds. 9 seconds. That's the kind of life or death situation police officers are put into. We had an officer call the program yesterday, And you could hear the brokenness and the tears over the way they are now treated as a result of doing their job and the vilification that has taken place as a result of Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Did you hear them chanting? I think it was in New York, all police are, and then a curse word begins with a B and A. And you just remember pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. This stuff has just got to stop. And Americans who care about the future of our country and care about all lives, yeah, let you all forgive me. I've never used profanity on the air, okay? I'm going to break that right now. Are you ready? Here goes. All lives matter. Yeah, folks, you know, that's profane in many circles. Now, you can't say that. You're not allowed to say that. Oh, my goodness. Oh, you, what did you? How dare you say such a thing? Yeah. All lives matter, period. The lives of these children, regardless of the color of their skin, the lives of our police officers, all lives matter. The life of that young girl who was saved from stabbing, her life matters too. You remember the young kid? Oh my goodness, I'll pull that up in a second. Of European ancestry, a black guy comes out of a trailer in a trailer park, a living situation, walks up to the kid and kills him, blows his brains out. You didn't hear about that being a racial issue. Black adult kills young white child. You didn't hear any of that. All lives matter. And the thugs that are running around our country killing people have got to be stopped. They've got to be locked up. And in cases where lethal force needs to be used, that's just the way it works. It's tragic. It's horrible because we all wish that every human being would be doing something productive and something encouraging, something that would contribute to bettering their lives and the lives of others. We all wish everybody would be doing that, but there are people out there who are absolutely determined to do harm to other people, to destroy property, to destroy other people's lives, and they've got to be dealt with. That's just the way it is. It's sad that this kid threw her life away that way. She was in foster care, and you all know that I was raised in foster care up until the age of 10 years old. I know how that goes. Probably didn't have anybody who could control her. And here she is wielding a knife. And if you saw the video, that knife was pulled back ready to spring. I mean, there wasn't any her standing on the side saying, don't bother me, because if you do, I'll cut you. No, she was in full-blown combat and attack mode. And I commend the police officer because here again, he had 9 seconds to make a decision. He had a split second to deal with what she was doing. I mean, look, 1 second later, that other child could have been dead. I'm not exaggerating, folks, literally. How long does it take to bring a knife from the extended position of striking into a person's body? 1 second, maybe less. That's all he had. And he took action. And I know that the I don't know where the family of that young girl, Micaiah Bryant, is, because she was living in foster care. She was in social services. But I know there must be somebody who loves her, knows her, and wanted better for her. But she made a decision in her life that cost her life. It wasn't the police officer that cost her life. It was her decision to use that knife in threatening the murder of another young person. And that's what cost her life. But you know, you can't even say that. That's here again. That may be profanity too. It's not profanity here on American Family Radio because it's the truth. But in other places, that would be profane. Oh my goodness. We will not allow you to speak that way here. Because the truth is not allowed. You want to know why people are in bondage? It's not because of racism. It's because of lies and deception. Because just as the truth makes you free, lies put you in bondage. And there are a lot of people in bondage because they have been lied to, they've accepted the lies, they bought the lies, and now deception and lying and fantasy has become their way of life. Ray, Joy Behar. He should have shot in the air. Whew. Back in a moment. To take your...
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
From my high school days, I recall a poem about a man by the name of Paul Revere. Do you remember how it began? Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. Now, those may not be the exact words, but they remind us of that poem which we had to memorize. There was another person who made a similar ride during that War of Independence. I doubt that you've ever heard of her. Her name was Sybil Ludington. She was only 16 years of age the night her father received a message that the British had just destroyed a neighboring city and advancing toward their home. Sybil volunteered to ride through the countryside in the middle of the night to warn other residents of the approaching enemy and to call them to arms in defense. All night Sybil rode, going from farmhouse to farmhouse, warning the farmers that British soldiers were advancing and telling them to join in the preparation for battle. When one compares these two rides, he discovers that the poet perhaps did an injustice by writing of Paul Revere. For Paul Revere rode only 10 miles in his famous ride, yet Sybil Ludington rode about 40 miles, and her ride was far more effective. The comparison points out something we need to remember in life. It isn't always the person who does the most good who gets the greatest acclaim. Many have been the number of people who have made outstanding and lasting contributions to society whose name is known by only a few. Don't think that the contribution you make isn't too important simply because your name isn't spread across the country in the mass media. For despite what we think, those who make the headlines are not the only ones who contribute to the good of mankind. More often than not, they aren't even the major ones. If fate should happen to give you the reward of public recognition for the good you do, well and fine. But if not, just remember that your contribution is in no way diminished simply because the world does not know your name. After all, the reason we do the good which we do isn't to gain public recognition. The reason we do it is because we know what we should do. In fact, a person who gets angry because he fails to get public recognition for something he has contributed to society really isn't a person who needs publicity. Above us, keeping watch over us, is one who sees the good we do. He isn't necessarily impressed by the headlines, but he is impressed when we do the best we can with what we have to do with. And it is his recognition, not the public's, which really matters after all is said and done. While the world may not know your name, just remember that he does.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
The Awakening.
The Awakening.
Download and listen at your leisure with the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to our host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
We're back. The number is 888-589-8840. This is First Amendment Friday. I want to hear what you've got to say. Two other quick things. One, did you see that video of that mom who stood in front of that school board, where was that? Gwinnett County Public Schools, and basically ripped into them over making 6- and 7- and 8-year-old children wear masks all day. And she said, it's time to stop. That's not in the interest of children. Thank God for her. God bless her. Because frankly, I don't think it's in any of our interest to be wearing masks. I think we're gonna probably find that out when this thing is all over, but certainly not children, who have been proven to be virtually immune to this thing. And yet you've had children kicked off of airplanes because a 2-year-old won't put off a mask. This stuff has invited the little tyrannical spirit that lurks in the hearts of some human beings who just think controlling other people is such a kick. It just gives them thrills, and they just need to keep asserting their control and their domination of others. Get that mask on. Get that mask on. What are you trying to do, kill people? No, these young children are simply trying to live their lives and breathe fresh air. And the other thing, the Oklahoma City State House was basically assailed. People entered into it and interrupted the legislative session in a riot and a protest over a law that was passed, basically saying that when you protest, you can't block traffic. And if you get in the way or you threaten somebody and they hurt someone trying to escape in their automobile, we've seen situations where people have been killed by getting pulled out of their, or severely injured by getting pulled out of their automobiles while they're trying to get through a protest. In one case, a child was killed because some Black Lives Matter protesters opened fire on the car because the car was trying to get out of the danger, out of the protest, out of the melee. And they've said, basically, if you do that, you'll be protected. You'll be treated just like the right to stand your ground in your own home. You'll be given the right. You'll be acknowledged that you have the right to use your vehicle to get away. And if somebody gets hurt in the process of that, you will not be criminally liable for that. And I think that's the right way to go. So there's a lot of other stuff to talk about, and we talked about a lot this week. The number again is 888-589-8840. Let's come back to your calls, or come to your calls again for today. And let's go to David in Louisiana. David, welcome.
Hello, Bishop. This is David, yeah.
Hi, David. Good to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Bishop. I want to say I listen to you on the air for almost every day.
Thank
and,
you.
I appreciate it more than you know. I wanted to comment today on my feelings on the Derek Chauvin ordeal, which
okay.
is, I think, is what they're expressing. There's some police officer, you know, doing a bad thing. He's charged, convicted, and, you know, something has to be done. But I think there's something very serious brewing in that the godless politicians are taking a stab at our trial by jury system. You know, mm-hmm. the one, you know, you tried by your peers, you know.
Right.
Although I know, like, majority of crimes, you know, maybe you won't see a jury, you may just see a magistrate or a city judge, but anyway. When's the last time, you know, someone sat on jury duty and sat next to a CEO or an elected official? It just doesn't happen. For some reason, almost done. I just wanted to say also, don't quote me, but I think it was it Robert Shapiro? He may have been the prosecutor for O.J. Simpson murder trial back.
That was one of them. I think Shapiro might have been on the defense team, but we won't go to those details. But what point do you want to make?
He was asked, I think, he said, people were saying, well, we all know O.J. Was guilty, but how was he acquitted? Well, he made this statement, you know, saying, well, you have to understand there's judicial justice and moral justice. But isn't it funny how he left out the number one Supreme Justice, the Lord God Almighty?
Amen.
And I want to close with, I want to close with something by one of our local Southern Air Force guys, and you'll know who I'm talking about, Will Addison. He say, I'll close with this. He said,
okay.
God don't wink at that.
Okay, David, I got to go, but thank you. Thank you so much for the call, David. We appreciate it. Look, folks, our jury system is a beautiful thing. It really is. It can be perverted, of course. It can be perverted because human beings are involved. But it's a beautiful thing in the sense that no politician, no governor, no mayor, no police officer gets to determine your guilt. You're tried by a jury of your peers who get to look at all the evidence, hear from you, presumably, in most cases, or in many cases they can, and then they decide, do we believe that this person is guilty or not? And that's because, in other words, we don't give the government the authority to take away your freedom. Only a jury of your peers can do that. Now, you can waive the right to be tried by a jury, but that's, to me, it's just, here again, it goes to the nobility of our country and the beauty of our system of justice. And it's not perfect, no, but it's better than anyone, I think, any other anywhere in the world or that's ever existed. Let's go to Kathy in Mississippi. Kathy, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, Kathy, you are on.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. I truly don't believe that this is a racist nation. As I was telling my children that I've seen nothing but interracial relationships everywhere I've lived in the states that I've lived in, and most of my children are, you know, friends with, you know, biracial kids. And so, you know, for them to say that this is a racist nation is so not true. Also, when there's a natural disaster that happens in any of our states, you know, we all come together to help one another, you know. And so I just pray that we would come together, you know, and understand and not listen to the lies of what everybody is saying. You know, I just want to thank you for taking my call. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Kathy. Kathy, you made a very good point. I said this repeatedly, and people will point to our history, but I've said in a nutshell, there's never been a moment in American history when there weren't people in America, Americans, who spoke up and said, you can't do that to other people based on the color of their skin. How can we be a racist nation if there were people always opposing any mistreatment of others based on skin color? You have to remember, the Civil War didn't happen all at once. There was a long culmination of debate that turned increasingly violent with Bloody Kansas, for example. But it turned increasingly violent leading up to the Civil War. So how can you be a racist nation when there were people who were prepared to give their lives to end the discrimination and mistreatment of others? I mean, it's just silly. But there are people, they don't care about history and they don't care about facts. They care about fundamentally transforming this nation into some sort of socialist state. And whatever they have to say, whatever they have to get people to believe in order to get them to go along with that, they'll do. And by the way, they also say that capitalism itself is inherently racist, which means they'd like to get rid of free enterprise, too. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Stan in Tennessee. Stan, welcome.
Good morning, Bishop. I'll try to keep it brief. I want to comment on the situation in Ohio about the girl who had the knife and the stabbing. One thing that came to my mind, I don't know if the point has been brought up, the people standing around. They were people standing around, males standing around, just watching, not doing anything. And one male on the video knocked down another female and kicked her. But my thought was, there's people just standing around like this is some type of spectator sport. So, you know, that's sick. That is sick. And to me, like you say, this country has a heart problem, a sin problem, but also because of the heart problem. And unless God, the grace of God, transforms your heart, you're going to get what you're getting. And another thing, you know, there's just a lot of hate. Everybody is ripping people apart, and it just—I bet the devil's just laughing and having a heyday. But that's what I wanted to say. But I have one more thing. Yesterday,
well, just say it quick, Stan, because we're about to go to a break, so you get to close us out. Go right ahead.
Okay. The officer that called in yesterday, the 22-year veteran,
that really touched
my heart. And I commend you, Bishop, for stopping and praying for him and all officers. I thought that was a very thoughtful, good gesture on your part, so thank you.
Well, Stan, thank you. It was certainly heartfelt. And you're right, that touched my heart too, folks. And any of you who were listening, I mean, it just goes to show these police officers are human beings who care about others and want to do a job in an honorable way, and they're being vilified for it by the left. And I think it's not the police officers the problem. It is these rabble-rousing leftists who want us to be a communist nation. Back in a moment.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill. But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. Use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. and thanks.
American Family Radio newscasts are now available as a podcast.
I'm Rusty Pugh.
I'm Steve Jordahl.
Didn't catch the full story? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Chris Woodward.
I'm Chad Groening.
Didn't have the radio on at the top of the hour? Listen to the podcast.
I'm Charlie Bunch.
And I'm Fred Jackson.
Get accurate news from a Christian perspective whenever you want it with the American Family News podcast. You can also sign up for our daily news brief. Visit onenewsnow.com.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at AFAFoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
And so many people have afflictions that are so painful and so difficult and that really a day, one more day, is a victory.
Stephen Arterburn on Focus on the Family Minute.
And I just want you to know that God is with you. Your angels are in the presence of God, making sure He doesn't ignore what you're going through. And He loves you in the midst of that pain. And it was not the original plan. It is not the original plan. Yes, we do things that hurt ourselves, and sometimes we're the victim of people hurting us. But I'll tell you, God's there for you. And if you can cling on to Him and grow closer to Him rather than abandon Him or think He's mad at you or experience shame or something like that, you will receive that crown of life. He will bless you. He will comfort you.
Hear more encouragement from Steve at FamilyMinute.org.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
It's First Amendment Friday, folks. This is the time when I take as many calls as I can. The number is 888-589-8840. Thank you all for your patience. Some of you have been waiting quite a while, so let's get right back to the phones. Let's go to Joe in Arkansas. Joe, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Bishop Jackson. I just wanted to make a couple of comments on this recent shooting of the girl that was about to stab the other girl. And that's that, well, as far as shooting in the air goes, I believe the cop had already yelled at her to stop, and she ignored that. So if he shot in the air, I suppose she would very likely have ignored that too. And second, I think that it would be a good idea if the country, if people would ask and demand for LeBron James and other people that are condemning what this cop did, to answer this question, and that is, if it was your daughter that was about to be stabbed, what would you have wanted that cop to do?
Hey, Joe, thank you for the call. What you're suggesting, particularly about LeBron James, implies that he's got common sense. I don't think he's got sense, common or not. Folks, here again, please forgive me if this seems like a personal attack, because I really don't mean it that way. But when you've got 50 million people on your Twitter account and you've got people all over this great country admiring you, and you are at billionaire status, he's close to it if he hasn't crossed it. So you've got all the money, all the influence imaginable, and you use that instead of trying to heal, trying to bring people together. You use that to say what our caller just said, what Joe just suggested, that, well, what if it were my daughter who were about to be stabbed? And you then express yourself with a modicum of humility and grace, and trying to understand, maybe even understand both sides. Maybe you say, well, you know, this is a kid in a foster situation. You know, wow, what was going on in her mind? What could have been done or should have been done to prevent this from ever happening? Okay, I get that. But to condemn and to threaten the police officer? I mean, really? Talk about an abuse of the gifts you've been given. So I have no respect for LeBron James whatsoever. I mean, I love him as a Christian. He needs to be saved. But as in terms of respecting him as a human being, as far as I'm concerned, he really has crossed the Rubicon. I mean, he could have gotten that cop killed. Putting his picture up like that and saying, you're next. And this great country of ours has rewarded him with what he would never have made or gotten anywhere else. Oh, and by the way, oh, I got to remind you all of this. I'm coming right back to your calls. I had a caller calling yesterday. I ought to copyright this and give him attribution. You know, basketball and football were created by Americans of European ancestry, or what the world, what the left would call white people. Why don't they just quit? Why don't you say, I'm not playing a game created by a white man? I mean, really, really, if that's your position in life, that everything is racial, why isn't basketball racial? Why isn't football racial? And just give it up, because after all, why should you be playing a game that was created by white men? See, but that's how preposterous this all is. That's how God spoke this to my heart. If you see life through a racial lens, you are a racist. Let's come back to your calls. You've been very patient. Anne in Alabama. Anne, welcome.
Yes. Hey, Pastor E.W. Jackson. That's how I grew up. Just love you and respect you.
Thank you.
Just so thankful that you're helping to educate us uneducated senior adults. But I have two comments. I grew up in Massachusetts. In my backyard across the valley from our little cottage was a house, a two-story building, a farmhouse. Guess what they had in their basement? A shelter for the black slave protection as they traveled north. And so we're not racist. We were not racist. I grew up never knowing this comment about racism or prejudice. We were a country of an area of northeast New England of immigrant children, and we had French communities, Italian communities, and I never ever sensed any friction among us. So we weren't white privileged, we weren't racist, and so that's the end of that comment.
Okay, Anne, what's the next one? But that's a good one. That's a good one, because the Underground Railroad was staffed primarily by Americans, once again, of European ancestry. So here again, when you say, well, America's racist, well, then why were they even helping? Why did they even care? Because they understood that the treatment of people based on the color of their skin was wrong. Go ahead, Anne. What's your next comment?
And the second point is about our problem is not guns, as you know. It's not racism. Mm-hmm. It's violence that all of our generations of children, I have 14 grandchildren. I'm thankful that my children don't have televisions, because that is where the murders and the violence and the sexual innuendos, not just that, but, you know, we don't have Love Island, we have Lust Island. And that is where the problem is. Dr. Dobson years ago said he was, I mean, like 30 years ago, he was elected to be on a commission on examining the evidence of pornography in our culture.
I remember.
The only person who voted,
Anne,
you know.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for the call. I've got so many people waiting to get through, but Anne, you've made some very, very good points, and I thank you for them very much. All right, let's get to Wiley in Mississippi. Wiley, welcome.
Yes, sir, Bishop. Just wanted to comment on this, making these kids wear these masks. That's straight out of the pits of hell of Satan. All those causing that to happen will be in hell, I believe, when Jesus gets through with them. The public school system's not of God, never has been of God, never will be of God. Get your kids out of them hell holes. That's all I got to say.
Okay, Wiley, you know, Wiley, my only prayer for you is that one of these days you'll actually say what you really think. You know? Well, look, by the way, of course, Wiley sounds to me like he's a Christian. He understands that anybody can repent of anything wrong that they're doing and be received by God, except Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. So we're not saying that anybody is beyond salvation. because God doesn't want anybody to be lost. But, you know, Wiley made a very good point about what public schools are doing. They were never designed to do what Christians believe that public schools should do. That doesn't mean we should abandon them. That doesn't mean we should just turn our backs on them completely. Of course, we pulled our youngest children out of them because we just didn't want to fight all the time. But running for school board, getting involved, trying to bring some sanity to the situation is something that's got to be done until we can, and even after we have universal school choice, which is what I favor, universal school choice, all children get to choose, their parents get to choose any school they want and use the resources of tax dollars to go to that school rather than be stuck in a school because somebody says that's the school you've got to go to, even if it's not educating your child. But, oh, boy. Okay, thank you for the call. Let's go to, let's go to Yvette in Ohio. Yvette, welcome.
Hi.
Well,
I was listening to you, and I guess I'm just as stupid as Behart, because I said the same thing. Why couldn't he shoot in the ear?
Yeah,
then my son corrected me, Mom, if you shoot in the ear, what goes up must come down.
Right.
And the thing about it, I'm from the Virgin Islands. I'm from St. Thomas, and I never had to go through this black and white. We did not do that at home. If it did, I did not see it. You know,
I
think there's a little bit more to that story with those girls fighting. We are not getting the whole truth.
Well, Yvette, you know, they've tried to describe this as, you know, I heard, her name is Joyce Reed, on one of the networks say, well, you know, we had kids and they would bring a pen knife and the teachers would break that up and they didn't need guns. This wasn't a pen knife and this wasn't some little school scrap. This girl, if you see that video, she is enraged. And you might be right, Yvette, there may be something behind this that we don't know, because this girl, to me, she looked like her intent was to kill the young lady that was in front of her, and he was not joking about it. Yvette, thank you so much for the call. Wow, I'm running short on time. I want to get some more in here if I can. Let's go to Taishe. Taishe, welcome.
Hello there, sir.
Hello.
I called to make a comment about the little girl that got shot.
Okay.
I know everybody keeps talking about it like it was something that was bad, but I feel terrible for the police officer who had to make sudden decisions. And, you know, he's feeling the backlash about that from, you know, the community. But at the end of the day, things like this happen almost every single day. And he has a job to do. And that job was at a terrible point before he even showed up to the scene. I don't feel bad for what he did, because at the end of the day, we don't know if he saved that girl's life or not. You know, he had to make the decision that he had to make that second.
Right. And we'll never know that. What we do know is the way she was positioned and what she appeared to be about to do, she was going to definitely do some damage to that girl. She might not have killed her, but if she hit her in the neck or hit her in the heart, that girl probably would have died. I mean, because here again, it was a vicious fight. Hey, Taishe, if you don't mind my asking, you sound like a young guy.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm a young black male, and I grew up in the South. So, you know, I've seen a lot of, you know, racism in my environment. But I was taught to be, you know, I'm more ignorant of that type of stuff. And with a lot of the stuff going on, it's circled around a lot of the black community is mad from current events, but these are events that's been occurring time and time again. I've even seen it myself.
Let me ask you a question. Taishe, do you think that most people know that twice as many suspects are killed, white suspects are killed by police as black suspects? I've got to go, but can you give me a quick answer? Do you think most people know that?
No, they do not know that.
Yeah, yeah. See, I think people really believe that police are only killing black people, when in fact the danger of the job means that there are confrontations that they have in which people are killed, and race can be a factor, but most of the time it's just the danger of the situation. Hey, Taishe, be sure to call me again. I see you're in Virginia. Maybe our paths will cross somewhere along the way. God bless you, young man. Folks, that's gonna do it today. We got a late start, but I tell you what, we hit the ground running. And you always remember, no matter what, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit. Because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.